Montana talks here. Live and local. This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
Broadcasting live across the great state of Montana, powered by the Montana Electric Cooperative Association. Your Montana Electric Cooperative, they do much more than keep the lights on for you. This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
You know, if you've been listening to this show for the last four plus years, you already knew what was going on in Gallatin County, what was going on in Bozeman, Big Sky. You knew what was going on our reservations. You knew what was going on in places like Billings. But so this headline would be no surprise to you here. Drug bust in Bozeman leads to arrests and major narcotics seizure. Look, what have we been telling you? We had great guests join us on the show, like Stacy Zinn, the former head of the DEA in Montana. She joined us on the show when she was still the acting, when she was actually on the job as the head of the DEA here in Montana. And then, of course, she's joined us since she retired as well. But look, we were telling you the Mexican drug cartels weren't just targeting the reservations here in Montana. They weren't just targeting Billings, for example, in some of the larger cities. But she told us how the Mexican drug cartels were moving into Bozeman. They were moving into Big Sky. They were moving into Gallatin County. And then when Governor Greg Gianforte joined us on this show, he told us that federal law enforcement told him that there's 1,000 illegal aliens in the state, and most of them are in Gallatin County. But yeah, NBC Montana had this story about a big drug bust that led to the arrest of five individuals and the seizure of substantial quantities of narcotics and cash. The operation, spearheaded by the Missouri River Drug Task Force, began in late March when a maintenance worker at a local apartment complex reported finding suspected methamphetamine, scales, and baggies during routine maintenance. So then, basically, Bozeman Police, Gallatin County Sheriff's Office, law enforcement from Montana State University, and federal agents all executed a search warrant back on April 2nd. That resulted in the arrest of three adult Hispanic males who were found to be in the United States illegally. Authorities seized about 2 pounds of meth, over a pound of cocaine, $45,000 in cash, and four vehicles. Then they had another operation that led to a traffic stop by a Bozeman police officer, and that ended up leading to more cocaine, more cash. Another Hispanic male driver attempted to flee but was quickly apprehended. And so it's just, here we go yet again. You have more illegal aliens being busted with drugs, more illegal aliens committing crimes on top of the crime of entering this country illegally. And yet the Gallatin County commissioners, and specifically the Gallatin County attorney, they don't want to shut off the spigot. They want to make it harder for ICE to get these illegal aliens out of this country. The Gallatin County attorney, last report I saw, is digging in her heels and refusing to work with ICE. Absolutely outrageous. There's more headlines where those came from. We'll jump into it right after this. Plus, we've got the phone lines open for you, 406-294-0970.
Montana Talks, uniting the Treasure State, one conversation at a time. Here's your host, Aaron Flint.
Yeah, lots to talk about on this Monday. Here was another NBC Montana headline. The woke language aside, NBC Montana has been doing some great reporting on the illegal alien front, especially out of Bozeman. This was from Friday evening. Gallatin County Attorney's Office speaks out against ICE partnership proposal. So just like I told you last week, we had a story on our Montana Talks website about how Gallatin County officials are standing in the way. They're obstructing federal law enforcement to find, locate, and deport these criminal illegal aliens, actively working against their own citizens. another NBC Montana headline. Two illegal aliens. Well, they call them undocumented immigrants, but they're illegal aliens. Two illegal aliens were sentenced to prison after stabbing two men in downtown Bozeman in February of 2024. There's a story out of Great Falls, a couple stories out of Great Falls, a story out of Billings, and more. I'll get to that here in a second. But first, let's start getting to some of your phone calls. 294-0970, Gerald in Bozeman. Gerald, what's on your mind this morning? Gerald, are you still there? Okay, Gerald just called in. All right, I'll throw that call back on hold. All right, let's see. Frank in Evergreen, what's on your mind?
Oh, the prison system here in Montana. We don't need a medium security prison. It looks like the state of Montana sued Kalispell. They have to have it right on the outskirts of their city. I would think a better place to put it would be the Anaconda aluminum plant up here in Columbia Falls. It's very secluded, and it's got a good security fence and a good foundation. They're not going to tunnel out of that. And then another one would be, the Anaconda copper mine's old Berkeley pit. You have a floating island there. No one could swim out of that island, you know, like Alcatraz, you know.
Yeah, what do you think about Trump talking about reopening Alcatraz? Sounds like San Francisco is freaking out. I just love how he can throw Pelosi and the rest of them into a tizzy with something like this.
True.
All right. Well, thanks for the call, Frank. Yeah, as I understand it, that's a pre-release center that they're looking to get up and running in Kalispell. I know there's some local pushback with where the pre-release center might be located. Now contrast that on the flip side. You've got like the city of Billings, for example. I thought it was interesting. Jennifer Owen, who's a Billings City Council member, she's telling the state, hey, stop sending us money. We don't need more pre-release programs in Billings because Billings has had too many of these pre-release programs. And so they're saying, hey, start building these programs elsewhere because, you know, Billings has basically over the years turned into the dumping grounds for the state's offenders. And so I think the state is trying to spread out more of these programs. All right, next up, let's go to Cheryl in Bozeman. Cheryl, thanks for the call. What's on your mind?
Yeah, hey guys, how are you doing?
Hey, great. Yeah, what's going on?
Yeah, so I was just calling because I wanted to congratulate our friends over in Texas because they actually passed universal school choice and it was signed into law over the weekend. So that is super, super exciting. And they join our neighbors, Wyoming, Idaho, North Dakota, in passing school choice this session, which is kind of a bummer for Montana because we had a great bill that got voted down, but it's really cool to see in other states they're making good choices for families to give them options. And the other thing I wanted to mention was that we do here in Montana have a couple options for school choice. And right now the Special Needs Education Savings Account application window is open for the fall. And so families who have kids with special needs who were in the public school this year, they can apply for up to $8,000 in education expenses to go towards their education expenses for tutoring, for curriculum, and other things. And so if people are interested in this program, it's a really great way to really thread the needle and find ways to help kids. And they can go to ednavigatemt.com and click on the parents page and then go read all about the education savings account on our website.
That's interesting what you said about Texas because I was reading a piece at thefederalist.com earlier this morning, and they were kind of criticizing the Texas legislature for. In fact, they also criticized the Montana legislature. They criticized several different red state legislative branches. This was the headline: conservatives can't make America great again until they hold red state rhinos accountable. And so they were criticizing, you know, Texas for not being conservative enough in their state legislature. But it sounds like they went the right direction with school choice.
Yeah, you know, our red states are quite a mixed bag in general. You have people from you know, Freedom Caucus, hard conservatives, all the way up to moderates. And it is difficult, but it takes a coalition of those sorts of people to pass school choice. So I think that there might have even been some Democrats who came on board for Texas, which is great. But Governor Abbott made it his number one priority after their last session. And he did what he needed to do to find supporters of school choice, because he knew that that is what his constituency wanted so bad, was to have options. And now they're going to have the biggest school choice program in all of America, just because of the greatness of their state. They have so many people. But they have really, really opened up the door and rolled out the red carpet for parents to be able to choose and find alternatives outside of the public school system.
Yeah, interesting. And yeah, and especially down in Texas, I'm sure in some of the urban areas, you get a lot of support in the Black and Hispanic communities for school choice as well, because they get stuck in those failing school districts oftentimes. All right, thanks for the call.
This is Poll Parade with Fox News Director of Polling, Dana Blandon.
As we continue thinking about the early days of Donald Trump's second term, our Fox News survey checked in with voters about their 2024 choice for president. Regardless of who they pulled the lever for, 85% remained satisfied with how they voted. And among Trump supporters, it's 89%. That's a lot, but it's down from 97% who were satisfied 8 years ago at the start of his first term. Back then, 80% of voters overall said they wanted Trump to succeed. Today, 62% feel that way, an 18-point drop compared to 2017. While the number of Republicans who want him to succeed holds steady at more than 9 in 10, the share of Democrats and independents who say they want Trump to succeed has plummeted by 30 points or more. Even so, that still means many in the country are rooting for Trump, even if they didn't vote for him or they disapprove of what he's doing. I'm Dana Blanton. That's your Poll Parade.
Broadcasting live across the big sky, Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
Yeah, we got a message on the Montana Talks app. This comes from Michael in Bozeman. It's time to investigate the Gallatin County officials to see if they are taking kickbacks from these illegal alien drug dealing terrorists. That's the message from Michael in Bozeman. Yeah, the Democrat county attorney in Gallatin County is doubling down on her obstruction against federal law enforcement, against U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement officials. NBC Montana had this story late Friday. The Gallatin County Attorney's Office is voicing opposition to a proposal to partner with the U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement. The proposal is to house undocumented immigrants. That's what NBC Montana calls them. Let me fix it for them. The proposal is to house criminal illegal aliens at the Gallatin County Detention Center. Apparently, the Gallatin County attorney doesn't want to enforce the laws. Apparently, invading this country and breaking the laws of this country don't matter to the Gallatin County attorney. Gallatin County Attorney Audrey Cromwell is basically fighting the efforts of Sheriff Dan Springer. Sheriff Dan Springer is working to protect the people of Gallatin County, but the Gallatin County attorney is sparring with the sheriff and trying to block his efforts to help with public safety. She stated, quote, "Nothing about this detention contract makes Gallatin County a safer place to live, work, or go to school. Voluntarily becoming a detention center for ICE could not only expose the county to significant liability, but also damage relationships within our community, leading to lower rates of crime reporting, witness cooperation, and engagement with victim services." It's like she has a George Soros hand card with bullet points spelled out for her, sitting right in front of her. She's doubling down on the obstruction. Caden, who do we got on line one? Yeah, shoot me a note with who we got on the phone line so I can get to these callers here. Definitely want to get to your phone calls here, 406-294-0970. But yeah, just look at these headlines out of Bozeman. Drug bust in Bozeman leads to arrests and major narcotic seizures. Cocaine, methamphetamines, cash. And what is the Gallatin County attorney doing about the root source of the problem, which is all of these criminal illegal aliens being allowed into this country. Here's the other headline. Two illegal aliens sentenced to prison after stabbing two men in downtown Bozeman. Remember when these stories first came out, too, by the way? Oh, stabbing in downtown Bozeman. And then at like the very end of the news stories, that's when they would tell you. That's when they would tell you what was actually going on. That's when they would tell you, oh, well, by the way, they happen to be an undocumented immigrant or whatever. I mean, we've had sexual assaults, young women pulled out of the bars in Bozeman. Illegal aliens. Wrong way drunk drivers on the interstates. Illegal aliens. Cocaine and meth dealers. Illegal aliens. And yet the Gallatin County attorney is standing in the way of ICE, standing in the way of the Gallatin County sheriff from dealing with the root problem and source of these crimes. A lot of crimes that people had never seen at this scale in places like Bozeman and Gallatin County before. Now, elsewhere across Montana, Billings, Montana, late Friday, this also came in. ICE, Salt Lake City, Billings sub-office arrested Javier Molina Mendoza of Mexico in Billings, Montana. He was convicted of felony possession of narcotics and DUI. He will be deported ASAP. That's from ICE, Salt Lake City. There was another story out of Cascade County, Montana. An illegal alien was arrested last week for stalking, resisting arrest, and obstructing a peace officer. And apparently there's been about 20 different calls for service related to this illegal alien since 2023, according to local law enforcement. Over the years, those calls and charges have included kidnapping, custodial interference, theft, order of protection violation, trespass, and other charges. And this was shared by the Immigrant Crimes, the Illegal Alien Crimes account on X, which has shared a lot of these stories here in Montana, as well as others elsewhere across the country. And then there was a crazy story. Some of you heard about this on your radio news updates earlier this morning. I heard this in the Montana State News Network update earlier this morning. I hadn't even seen this press release here. But you had basically van loads full of illegal aliens that were crossing our northern border from Canada into Montana. Now, thankfully, they were picked up by Border Patrol. Border Patrol caught them. But it was it was seven Romanian nationals who are now being charged with immigration offenses. But yeah, these seven Romanians crossed illegal into the country. They had, you know, van loads full of people. And they got picked up by Border Patrol. They got stopped on I-15 and then transported to the Sweetgrass Border Patrol station. But now they're being charged in federal court in Great Falls. So it's just story after story after story. All right, back into the phone lines we go. John in Kalispell. John, what's going on?
Well, Aaron, I've got a question for you. When an elected official, just like a judge or a county attorney or any elected officials, takes the oath of office, they're to uphold the Constitution, the laws of Montana, the laws of the United States. And who is not bringing these people up on a violation of their oath? Why is not the Montana Attorney General going after this individual in Gallatin County and charging her with a violation of either an oath of office or violating the law? Specifically, just like the judges down in New Mexico as well as in Wisconsin. And here is the problem that we have in this country. Everybody says, well, we are a nation of laws, not of men. Yet when the elected officials choose to go ahead and violate the laws, just like what we saw in the state Senate, nothing appears to happen to them. At least the Senate, albeit, in my opinion, weak, had to fortitude to go after one of their own for a violation of the rules or the laws of the state of Montana. And when is this going to take effect? I don't care who we elect. If they cannot follow the Constitution and the laws, they need to be removed from office in a legal fashion.
Well, yeah, it'd be interesting to see how she can be held accountable. And not only her, but the Gallatin County commissioners as well. Now, they're not being as aggressive, but they're still standing in the way. And they're still, you know, issuing these demands to ICE. Look, it's not like, you know, in Yellowstone County, there were some people who balked at the idea of using the Metra Park as a temporary detention, you know, holding area, you know, while these illegal aliens are then being shipped out, right? It would have just been temporary. But this is different. These are open spots in their jail. And then the people get deported and they get out of here. And so it's a totally different ballgame. But yeah, something's got to be done to hold these people accountable, because effectively what she is trying to do and what the Gallatin County commissioners are doing is they're effectively trying to turn Gallatin County into a version of a sanctuary city. And so they should be held accountable. And yeah, great question. Hey, thanks for the call, John. Appreciate it. Let's go next to Clint in Bozeman. Clint, what's on your mind?
Well, I got water's on my mind, but I got to answer the question here about the detention center and Dan Springer. Now, Dan Springer is supposedly the most powerful man in Gallatin County. And any sheriff in any county in any state is supposed to be. He has the last say of everything when it comes to law, other than the county attorney of pressing charges and stuff. But there's 10 beds, there's 10 cells in there in our county that is reserved by ICE. ICE is paying $130 a day to Gallatin County, whether they're in there or not, whether the cells are filled or not. It's a windfall for our county. They ain't saying that. And Dan Springer's one damn good sheriff, let me tell you. I know him. Now, the thing I really wanted to talk about is this, and nobody listens. It's the water. The water that goes into this, the things that go into these rivers, like the sewer systems of Bozeman, the sewer systems of all the states in the state of Montana go into them, are not treated good enough. Not good enough. I've had these tested now. I'm not full of crap. These waters aren't good enough for human consumption, really, or animals. And if you stop and think about all of the pills that's eaten going into the water system and through the toilets and stuff into your sewer plants, they're not taking it all out.
So you think they need to up the game when it comes to water treatment? You know, interesting that you raised the topic of water, because remember when, who was that far left guy running for, was it mayor? What was he running for in Bozeman? And he was saying, we don't have enough water. We don't have enough water. That's why we can't have any more, you know, housing projects built or whatever. Isn't it just funny that these folks on the left will say, look, we've got to stop development. We've got to stop a housing project from getting up and running because we don't have enough water. They'll gladly spill all the water down every spring, though, and ship it downstream. But apparently they don't worry about not having enough water when it comes to the, you know, hundreds of illegal aliens, maybe thousands of illegal aliens. You know, like they're so concerned about the environment. Oh, there's too many people here until those people are illegal aliens. And now they're all about having, you know, everybody and their mother in Bozeman and in Gallatin Valley. That all of a sudden they're not concerned about water anymore because they've got to keep the illegal aliens in Bozeman. That's why the county attorney there is fighting so hard against federal officials. All right, we'll sneak in some more calls after this. Plus, we got a great guest joining us in studio with kind of a look ahead at the upcoming fire season and how to be ready for the upcoming fire season. So, interesting guest from the Billings Flying Service joining us here in a few minutes as well.
This is where Montana talks at with Lane Nordlund.
As I continue my journey across Australia, part of the World Angus Forum, we are on the Angus Track Tour. Of course, we started in Sydney, and now we are in Tamworth, Australia, about halfway in between our ending point there in Brisbane. Jim Sitz at the Sitz Angus Ranch is attending this year's event.
You know, it's been awesome. I mean, you know, the people that we have met on this Angus Track Tour, is unbelievable. The hospitality that the Australians have showed us is second to none. I mean, I would encourage anybody to go on one of these tours and kind of see how other people, how they raise cattle, what their environments are like, what their challenges are like. One thing about that you're going to see is that a lot of their challenges are just like ours. The issues that they face with the metropolitan, you know, issues, you know, the, you know, from metropolitan areas and the challenges of taxes and logistics of in the cattle industry, they're very similar to ours.
While in Tamworth, Australia, we participated in the Angus Expo, the largest gathering of Angus cattle in Australia. We're on display and on the auction block, along with some competitive events like Camp Draft. If you've heard about it, you understand it. If you haven't, it's a mix between cutting and reining horse competitions. Hard to explain here on the radio. From Australia, I'm Wayne Norton.
Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
All right. Hey, by the way, all these stories, like the story out of Great Falls and the illegal alien arrested last week for stalking, resisting arrest, obstructing a peace officer. You can find that story. Go to x.com/Aaron Flint. The illegal aliens sentenced to prison for the Bozeman stabbing assaults. I got that story, x.com/Aaron Flint. And the illegal alien arrested and who will face deportation out of Billings, Montana. That story posted on X as well. Just got a message on the Montana Talks app. This came in from Hank in Bozeman. Gallatin County officials not working with ICE is unfortunately not unexpected. They are all Democrats inside with the criminal, illegal alien drug vermin over the law-abiding citizens of Gallatin County. I hope that voters will remember this disgusting act by the Gallatin County commissioners and the Gallatin County attorney during future elections. Hank, thanks for that message. Well, this is, it's already May 5th, and I saw a funny post on Facebook, I think it was over, or maybe Instagram, or who knows what, over the weekend, and it said, there's a reason they call it May. It may be 80 degrees, like it was yesterday in parts of the state. It may be snowing. It may be 30 degrees. You just never know what the weather may do in May, and we've already seen that here in just the first few days of May. But we've already got fire news on that front. We've got a Montana News Roundup on our Montana Talks website right now. Fire investigators are unsure what started the saw log fire, which is burning on Forest Service and BLM land northeast of Wisdom, Montana. But, apparently this is at the north end of the Big Hole Valley. They're saying it's burning over 1,500 acres. So that's really kind of, I guess, the first fire of the season here in Montana. Montana's U.S. Senator and aerial firefighter Tim Sheehy shared this NBC Montana story, saying Montana fire season is off to an early start. Smoke jumpers dropped in today. He shared this yesterday. This was on Sunday. Smoke jumpers dropped in, and we thank them for their dedication and skill. As the bulk of fire season approaches, it's critical we be ready to support communities at risk from the threat of wildfire. And on that front, pleased to have join us in studio, Bridger Blaine, the president of the Billings Flying Service. And Bridger, great to have you in studio.
Thank you so much for having me, Aaron. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, we obviously, even before this news of this fire broke out over the weekend, we were already planning on having you here in studio to join us. So first off, Billings Flying Service, what an impressive operation. I've been in your hangar. I've seen some of your Chinooks, but I didn't realize this. You guys have 12 Chinook helicopters in your portfolio now.
Absolutely, yeah. So we operated 6 last year, but we just bought another 6 from the Royal Netherlands Air Force, of all places. So we're working through the third one. So we'll be able to operate 9 this season and possibly even 10. But by next year, we'll be operating 12 Chinooks.
Give our listeners across the state first kind of a Blaine family history when it comes to the Billings Flying Service and firefighting and aviation in general.
Oh, that's folklore, Aaron. So we go back a long ways. But yep. It's actually a heck of a good story. So my grandpa learned from a gentleman just out of Joliet how to fly after that guy had come back from the war. That person later went on to become the test pilot, and his name was Jack Waddell. He was the first guy to fly the 747. So my grandpa learned how to fly in Joliet, went on to go spraying, had a couple businesses along the way, kind of an outlaw, loved shooting coyotes out of helicopters, and, you know.
Who wouldn't?
Who wouldn't, you know, and so always in trouble. So there's a couple of revs, and so, you know, my uncles fly, aunts fly, cousins fly, everybody's in aviation, and you know, mid-90s, my dad, Al, and my uncle, Gary, they started Billings Flying Service, and it's grown into what it is today.
Yeah, you know, when you guys bought the first ever commercial Chinook helicopter from the military, if I remember right.
Yep, first two.
So the first ever, and I remember when I first heard it flying overhead, because when I was in Afghanistan back in 2008 and 2009, there was, you know, no better sound than the sound of that Chinook helicopter, because that meant that we were probably going to get some mail out of our little remote outpost. So
totally.
You could hear the whoosh, whoosh, whoosh. Oh, it's like, oh, hey, we got mail, you know, and people are running down to the LZ.
I love it. That's great.
Yeah. So looking ahead to fire season, what do you think people need to be talking about, thinking about? What do you think? What do you want to tell folks across Montana?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, it's so interesting what I was going to talk about, this fire that you see over by Wisdom. I was actually in Butte a couple weekends, last weekend, and I looked around and I'm like, holy smokes, it is absolutely dry in Montana, especially western Montana. And so I think that Montana does have a lot of fire danger coming in. The weather patterns and just the moisture content and stuff, you know, we're looking at a pretty busy fire season in western Montana for sure.
Yeah, the summer outlook's looking like it could be a hot one here. I've got a headline on our Montana Talks website. Soaring temperatures predicted in new Montana summer weather outlook. I know we've been doing a better job at treating the fuels on our state lands.
Big time.
But we've still got a massive amount of work that needs to be done on federal lands. So, it's like, either way, it's not going to be tackled within the next month or two.
No. I mean, I think we have a busy year. Everything's really moving in the right direction, though. I think it's, you know, we can all be doom and gloom about fires, and I think, you know, we're all seeing the increased risks. But we really got to be proud as Montanans, and especially proud of our Montana delegation, because we're making moves in the right direction. You know, the legislature just passed a bill, and they're going to appropriate up to, you know, 0.5% of all the general revenue towards firefighting, and they're going to make that permanent. And so, you know, last year we saw the first, you know, big helicopter firefighting contract. We actually ended up getting awarded that contract. They just put out for a second one. They've got a really, you know, the Montana DNRC and the legislature have done a great job together of getting effective at aggressive initial attack, getting on these fires fast. And that's good because it protects land, but it's also good for the taxpayer. It's really cost efficient, and they see that. And so they're really moving in the right direction. So that's great.
I remember a few years ago, it was Governor Gianforte's first year in office, maybe it was his second, but all the conditions were ripe for a horrific fire season. And we ended up coming out pretty good from that fire season, but that was because of aggressive initial attack. And they said, look, you see it, you spot it, you put it out, and you aggressively attack that. That's where we've had a challenge on the federal front sometimes, is sometimes they're not allowed to go in and aggressively attack that fire, and they just kind of let it fester, and then it gets out of hand. But I understand the Trump administration's already making some changes on that front.
Big time. I mean, I have to give a shout out here. Tim Sheehy, we have an excellent senator in him. He understands the problems, you know, very well, and he's been a lot of the driving force on the federal front for, you know, changing this. And he's kind of, you know, working with President Trump and working with these different agencies and making sure we get the right people in the right places to make better decisions. And so we're seeing that shift a little bit. So it's good.
Yeah. Did you watch his podcast with Sean Ryan on the Sean Ryan show?
No, I didn't get to see it.
Oh, you got to go watch it. So, you know, obviously I've gotten a chance to interview, you know, chat with Senator Sheehy and get to know him over the years, but it was, apparently they recorded this thing at like midnight.
Oh, really?
And because it was just the only time that it worked post-election. And so, you know, Tim Sheehy, former Navy SEAL, Sean Ryan, former Navy SEAL, they both sat down and they talked for, I think, 2-3 hours, something like that, and talked about the history of firefighting policy in America.
Yeah.
And how it was kind of thrown together. And how, you know, you think about these cities that used to be made of wood, and that's why you'd see these massive fire. And anyway, but But he talked about, you know, the command and control of all the various aircraft assets alone. So having a aerial firefighter in a role like that, I think, is going to be a game changer for federal wild firefighting efforts.
Big time. He's, you know, making the moves in the right places, and I think the best is even yet to come. So I've gotten a preliminary look at some of what they're working on behind the scenes, and you know, there's been a little bit of leaks on this, you know, potentially an executive order coming out on firefighting, and I think we're going to see some real positive change. And having Tim in there, it's really pointed. He's making the right fixes in the right areas.
Got a message from, speaking of what the weather may look like in May. Yeah, Eric in Missoula says, well, it's snowing on Homestake right now. So there you go.
Yeah,
that's what may happen. That may happen in June,
yeah,
even. So.
Absolutely.
Well, let's sneak in a phone call here as well before we get to the break in about a minute. Susan in Missoula, did you have a question for our guest?
Well, I have a firefighter with the Forest Service. And, from my perspective, there have been cuts that are not necessary when it comes to firefighting. A lot of the seasonal people have lost their jobs, and they're the ones that the Forest Service counts on to fight the fires. And that goes with the BLM and for other agencies that they count on. So I'd like you to comment on that and give me a perspective of what this executive order exactly is going to be, because right now I'm very concerned.
All right. That's a great preview, great setup. We'll take the quick break here and then get reaction here from Bridger Blaine, the president of Billings Flying Service, right after this. Susan, thanks for the call. Great phone call. Appreciate it. You can also message us on the Montana Talks app right here during the break before we run out of time.
Broadcasting live across the great state of Montana, powered by the Montana Electric Cooperative Association. Your Montana Electric Cooperative, they do much more than keep the lights on for you. This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
All right, jumping right back into it here with Bridger Blaine, the president of the Billings Flying Service, talking about wildfire season preparations and more. So as I understand it, most of those folks that work for maybe the Forest Service or the BLM, there were no firefighters that were laid off in any of the cuts, but there were some other folks that might fulfill roles that could be helpful, some of those seasonal workers. As I understand it, most of those folks, actually, they figured out a way to reinstate most of those folks. Am I tracking, or what are you seeing and hearing?
Aaron, that's exactly how I understand it. Yeah, that wasn't the intent, right? There were certain roles where a lot of, you know, I liken it to kind of a battle station where when fire season's in full swing, people will step out of their normal day-to-day job at those agencies and they'll fulfill, you know, either a helicopter manager or an incident management team, they'll fulfill some kind of role. And that was not the intent, I don't think, to whack any of that. And so I think they're trying to go back and remedy some of those issues.
You guys actually had, five helicopters supporting the fires in California back earlier this year. What
yep.
was that like?
You know, absolutely crazy and chaotic. We have never been on a fire in the lower 48 in January before. So you don't expect it, right? You're in the middle of maintenance, you're preparing for the season, but you don't expect to go out. And so to get a call and then have to push five helicopters out the door and cruise, it was a all-hands-on-deck situation.
Yeah, well, that's one of the things I know Senator Sheehy's been talking about. He talked about in the Sean Ryan episode, which is like, hey, look, we have to have a capability that is ready to go year-round. I mean, we've already seen fires in New Jersey.
Yep.
And part of that goes back to we just don't take care of our so-called public lands the way we used to manage our so-called public lands. And so that's a big challenge here. But he's talking about the need for a year-round capability. I mean, even our wildland firefighters are typically, they're there for the season, and then we just, you know, kick them out the door for the rest of the year. And that's a year-round capability we as a country need to develop. That's his argument.
Yeah, absolutely. And I have to agree with him. I think he's right, you know, right on the money. And, I mean, that's why he's pushing all this stuff, right? He's, you know, pushed out the Aerial Firefighting Enhancement Act, you know, trying to get, you know, surplus military parts into the hands of these firefighting companies that need them. you know, fit for purpose Wildfire Readiness Act of 2025. You know, that's where they're talking about jointly, you know, taking DOI and the Department of Agriculture and you know, consolidating that fire under the National Wildland Firefighting Service potentially, just because the need is getting greater and it's a longer season compared to what it used to be.
What I love about companies like yours is, you know, as a military veteran myself, it's, you know, what these veterans want, many of them, so many, if not all of them, when they come back from a military deployment, if they're guard or reserve, or they get out of the service, or they retire from the military, is they want a job. They want a good job. And if you're somebody who works in, you know, aviation, a helicopter pilot, or you're a mechanic, something like that, what better way to have a job doing what you already know how to do but get to live in a place like Montana? And so many veterans want to come back to places like Montana. You guys are hiring, as I understand it.
Absolutely. We're pushing hard right now. You know, there's a shortage of, really the biggest need is there's a shortage of mechanics in the world, and so we rely heavily on the you know, the armed forces to supply those veterans that can fulfill this role. And it's amazing. Sometimes you'll get, you know, veterans that they worked on a Chinook in the Army, and then, you know, you hire them and you're like, I need you to work on a Chinook. And so they can plug right in. And so the need is great, and we've really appreciated that. And so we are looking. So if you know anybody, send them our way.
What's the pay like? What's the pitch? If you were talking to somebody right now, what's your pitch to give them to come work for you?
Absolutely. So, you know, there we have jobs all levels, but you know, we start guys out in the guys and gals out in, you know, $30+ an hour, but then we, you know, work up if you know, the right maintenance technician, you know, can work their way up to making, you know, $125,000 a year, you know, pretty quickly. So it's a good paying job. We have a significant portion of our people make over, you know, six figures.
And still get to home base in Montana, but yet see a little bit of the world. Definitely.
Absolutely.
See a good chunk of the country.
Yep.
During fire season especially.
Yeah, it's great.
Yeah. All right, well, before we get some final thoughts here from Bridger Blaine, the president of Billings Flying Service, hey, let me tell you guys about a great product. I got to meet, speaking of veterans, I got to meet Lee. He's a Marine Corps veteran, lives in Big Fork, Montana. I met him at President Trump's inauguration back in D.C. We had a whole group of Montanans there. And he started telling me about this product that he built. He said, look, Aaron, you're a veteran. You know what it's like. You know, you work hard, you play hard. And, you know, they always say, no pain, no gain. Well, what if you could get more gain with less pain? That's why he created this product, Power Plus Pain Aid. It's basically an energy drink, but without all those chemicals, and it's got some pain-relieving vitamins in it as well. So you get the energy and you get the pain reliever. Go to drinkpowerplus.com, drinkpowerplus.com, enter the code FLINT15 at checkout, and take 15% off your order. So 15% off, drinkpowerplus.com, enter the code FLINT15, FLINT15. Bridger Blaine, anything else you want to tell folks across Montana? We've got about 30 seconds to go.
Yeah, just really appreciate everybody's support. You know, one thing I will highlight, there's been a lot of questions about coming into our operation about flying at night lately. We have been doing some night vision goggle training for a contract down in California, so that should all be wrapped up, and we shouldn't be bothering the good people of Billings anymore. So,
see, I love the sound of helicopters. So, keep rotors up, whatever you'd say for that. I don't know, but yeah, it's great.
Fair enough.
All right.
Thanks, Aaron.
Hey, thank you. Thanks for joining us. Great to see you. Thanks for you and your team for helping to fight those fires for us.